This is CliffCentral.com.
All right, Transformation Platform. Last week we spoke with Thomas Conditi, the president of CEO and CEO of General Electric South Africa and General Electric Transportation in Africa. We're hoping to have him on next week and we'll talk about leadership in Africa and how to succeed as a leader in this on this incredible continent. So that was there's a podcast that you can download, of course, and listen to that. Today, I think an interesting conversation with a man called Dion Janssen van Rensburg. He was introduced to me by Rich Simmons, you know, to talk about something totally different. And I thought, well, he's got some fascinating insights into, I don't know, a lot of issues against the establishment, perhaps. So there's also an article we discussed 2 weeks ago, I think it was Alice and Richard and Louis, about where the world is going. And that touched on agriculture, banking,
medicine, healthcare, and
everything,
environment,
because of the ease, relative ease at which, I guess, yeah, technology, where technology is taking us. So maybe that's impacting everything and their mother and father and their businesses. So Dion, welcome.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. You've put me in the lion's den, so let's take it from there.
Yeah, Dion, thank you for coming. I know you've had a rough weekend and also a family member in an accident, and still you're here, and just not, you know, to disappoint us. So we appreciate that. Let's have a good half an hour. I don't know if you've had time to read that article that I sent you. I know you said it was tough.
I unfortunately didn't.
Yeah, you don't need to.
Yeah, I had some seminars over the weekend
and other things happening.
Other things happening.
Okay, a little bit closer to the mic. Okay, all right. I'm gonna start this way. I'm gonna ask you, what do you think is the biggest change or challenge that's about to hit us as a society? We can say South Africa, maybe broader, within the next 1 year. And then let's look at 2, 3, 4, 5 years. Maybe it's an unorthodox question, but what is lying ahead for us? What do you see? Because that's what you do, right?
That is part of what we do, yeah.
Okay, so before we go there, tell us what you do, but also your background. I know you have an accounting background, legal background.
Correct.
Just your background a little bit, and then what you do now.
Well, you know, I qualified as an accountant, and later I did law because I thought that if you are on the edge of law, you would be more successful in business. Unfortunately, these days you have to be. I've been in business most of my life, mining at the core of me, coal mining, and thereafter chrome mining. I've been to China in the period from 2006, just before the financial meltdown.
That was a good period. I mean, China was
17 times, which forced me, when I decided it's time to get out of business, to write a book which I called Seconds to Midnight, predicting the collapse of the Chinese economy.
So that book you brought out when?
In 2012.
Okay, and that was, it's a nice title.
Yeah, so because I saw, you know, China was the engine driving the global economy.
Yeah.
And I could see it is probably the prime example of malinvestment ever in the history of mankind.
Okay, then the business report editor wants to jump on.
but Dion, the jury's still out, right?
Pardon?
We're still talking 6% growth there in China.
You believe that? You believe an economy? Let me ask you this question. You believe an economy for which the imports has dropped in the last 6 months by 42% and the exports has dropped by 32%, grow at 6.5% per year?
Is it possible?
When the stock exchange in Shanghai has dropped 42% since October last year till now.
Okay.
You know, that is a manipulated economy, are feeding us this nonsense because nothing is happening out of China.
Well, I'm on my way to Shanghai in a month's time, so good. I'll come back and tell you what's happening.
You can just look at it. Yeah, 17 million China has created out of thin air, just in the first quarter of this year, $1 trillion. Uh-huh. And all of that is going into malinvestment. They're already sitting with 70 million empty residential apartments. They're sitting with 2.8 billion square feet of commercial property empty. You can go and look and see a replica of the Twin Towers, that whole area, completely empty.
Well,
look, you know, this is what is happening because they have other forces that's driving them. But I mean, you just have to follow the normal media, the alternative media, to find out what's happening really. Well, go and have a look at Bloomberg.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you a question.
Mm.
For the first time in since the last meltdown in 2008, central banks has become the drivers of the economy. The markets are looking at when Janet Yellen is going to say something, everything stops and everybody is waiting and everybody is hanging in the air. And if there's an indication that they're going to raise interest rates, suddenly everybody gets out of the stock exchange and get into the dollar. And then Janet Yellen keeps us busy for an hour and a half with the biggest lot of gobble that you've ever heard. Don't raise the interest rates because they've got a huge problem. America's already entering a recession. I've said South Africa is in a recession. Last year at my seminars, you can have a look at YouTube where you'll find them. South Africa's in a recession. But what does our formal economist say? No, you have to have a negative growth rate for 3 quarters before you are in a recession. What must I do after 3 quarters if I'm a businessman?
Yeah, look,
I want to know a month or a year before the time that we are heading for a recession so that I can take the precautions.
Look, I
love this energy because obviously what makes this platform work is because we're an alternative platform.
Sure.
So this is great. But if you talk about South Africa specifically, I could argue that we've gone beyond the recession. If you look at our unemployment rate and the fact that a lot of our problems have moved from structural to terminal.
Well, again,
would you agree with me on that?
No, I won't. Because the first quarter, our economy shrank. That's public record.
Okay, but what are we looking at?
Let me tell you what. How do you measure unemployment in South Africa? People who claim unemployment benefits? What about those people who 6 years ago stopped looking for a job because they are so disappointed that they can't find a job? Okay. They just now appeared worldwide. These people don't appear on statistics.
Just give us a moment.
Okay, but what I was trying to drive at is that we could argue that we're beyond the recession. Because I've argued in my writings that, you know, to use these preset definitions of how we define an economy, these boxes, we're in a different situation. We should think beyond what GDP measures because of the history and the legacy that we have. So I would agree with you, the fact that we need to have a more broader view of what is at play. But again, to go back and use definitions like recessions, which is 2 straight quarters of negative growth, for someone who's sitting somewhere in the township, that is irrelevant that, you know, we're talking 0.4 minus 0.8. Because they're in a depression, absolutely. You know what I mean.
You're absolutely right, and that is what we are all about. Because you see, there's an alternative economy that's doubling every year.
Which is bigger than the formal economy.
Which is bigger than the formal economy.
Yeah.
Because
Tell everyone what alternative economy is.
Alternative economy is an economy that you won't find in shopping malls or on the street corner. You find it on the internet.
Mm.
It's got its own money.
It doesn't necessarily go through banks and things like that.
Well, it's unregulated. We hate banks.
Mm.
You become your own banker. So when we start teaching people, we begin to teach people first liberty. What does liberty mean? Liberty is to take control of and responsibility for your own life. Realize that government can't help me. Government can't look after me. Government's not a moral actor. The banks are part of the elite. If you look at the top 50 corporations in the world, 48 of them produce nothing. They just shift money around.
Mm.
Only 2 of them. One produced something, which is the Brazilian oil company, and Walmart that sells the things that people produce. For the rest of them, all of them just shifts money around.
Is Apple among those? Is Apple?
No.
Is Google among those?
No.
Microsoft?
No, because these are, if you look at at the top 43,000 corporations in the world, and you begin to get the interconnection between them, you find that Google and Apple and Microsoft dwarf against these things. These too big to fail banks. The problem, they've become too big to bail out. Going to make a statement that the only thing that the Federal Reserve, and let me just say that in the global context, South Africa is but a speck of dust. Because every recession since 1913 has originated in the US. and everybody suffered globally from that. This time, it's going to be China and the US. Mm. I want to ask you a question.
Mm. Sure, I don't think I can answer
it. I'll ask these gentlemen a question. What is the total liabilities of the US?
14 trillion.
Pardon?
14 trillion?
No. 14 trillion is their GDP.
That's their economy. Okay.
That's their GDP. Mm-hmm. Their official debt is 20 trillion, 150% of GDP.
Yeah.
But you see, accountants are wonderful people. Ask me. Mm. We know how to deal with things that we call off budget.
Mm.
Unfunded liabilities is $80 trillion in the US.
Mm.
How is an economy that's producing barely 14 trillion a year going to repay $100 trillion of debt? By the end of this year, China's debt, and we don't know what their unfunded liabilities are, will be 380% of GDP, because they are going to produce $4 trillion out of thin air this year alone. And the first quarter was right on budget, $1,989 billion. In corporate bonds at 0.05%, which they've given to people. You can come and look at that. I'll give you the figures. That's my speciality.
Okay, so bring
now let me just say this.
Come back to the 1 year. So, is that part of what you predict in the next year?
Well, you know, there's more than just an economic and financial storm coming. There's a superstorm brewing. A superstorm is when, just like in nature, when a couple of storms are developing and then they converge to form a superstorm.
Mm.
I'm telling you, there's a financial storm. This so-called recovery that we had has run its course. If you go and look over the last 100 years, business cycles run in 10-year cycles consistently. 8 years, 9 years, 10 years, 11 years, that's it. There's a geopolitical storm brewing. And we're not talking necessarily about ISIS and all these things. We're talking about a global population in every country, on every continent, not in every country, but in countries on every continent in the world that are absolutely fed up with their governments and the system. And they're rising. And you know what? 76,000 people have been injured or killed in the last 4 years in these uprisings against their governments. Argentina, Venezuela, you just...
Up in Africa as well, yeah.
All over the world. In Europe, all over the world. There's an innovative storm brewing. We are moving out of the Silicon Age. The next age we're going to have is the graphene age. I don't know whether these gentlemen know what graphene is.
Tell us.
Well, go and Google it. It's the strongest material ever. The two scientists who discovered this in 2004 received the Nobel Prize for Science in 2010. It is single layer, thick as a human hair. It can carry an elephant on it. And there's no application for graphene. The invisible man has become possible. Samsung has already got in beta stage their first cell phone that you roll up and put it behind your ear like a pencil.
Mm.
In daylight, broad daylight, it shines like it is in middle of the night because it reflects no light whatsoever. That's why the invisible person is possible. The Israeli Special Forces is already experimenting with coating their battle dress with graphene-based covering so that you can't see them. Only when he gets behind in front of a tank, then you can see the rough silhouette.
This is stuff you saw in the
movies. But Dion, look.
So let me, I'm answering your question. So I'm not looking at South Africa, because even if we had the best government in the world and the most corruption-free government in the world, it would not have helped us much.
Okay.
So what we have to do is we have to tell this to people and begin to prepare them. Give them
educate people.
Educate people. First, what is liberty? Stop looking at Sasa to give me a handout, because how dignifying is that?
Okay.
You know, get there. I can show you in the alternative economy that the most safest investments will render you 15 to 18% per month on your money. Our currency, Bitcoin, has gone from 1 cent on the 3rd of January in 2009 to $786 this morning. Just in the last 6 weeks, it's doubled.
There might be a bit of a bubble there, but there's still things driving it, aren't there?
Well, we understand that. But you know what's the difference between your fiat currency, this useless notes that you have, and our currency?
Mm.
Our currency, there can only be 21 million ever.
Mm.
And today you go onto the Bitcoin luxury market and go and see whether there's anything in this world that you can't buy with Bitcoin.
Hmm.
You see, okay. let me show you something.
So you can hear he says our currency. You don't even talk about.
You see a bank on that?
No.
I'm my own banker.
It's a debit card that accesses Bitcoin.
Mm. And I swipe it wherever I want to.
Can I take a look at it?
Don't ask for the payment.
And you know what? This year alone, and I don't want to boast my own trumpet, but this year alone, I've made 86,000 Rand out of nothing, just by the increase in the Bitcoin price and the Rand dollar. Because here I have a hedge against dollar weakness, and I've got a hedge against the Rand weakness.
You've got Visa on that Bitcoin card.
Visa is just the company that do
yes,
the
Yes, it's the network. It's a networking thing. But that what does that tell us? And if Visa has bought into that platform?
Well,
yeah.
You know what?
What does that tell us?
If you go,
banks are saying something else, and Visa is saying, "Hey, we can actually process this."
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, absolutely.
Here's a banker, by the way. Not anymore.
If you know anything about Visa, the reality is Visa is a switch. They switch transactions.
Yeah.
Bitcoin is just a currency, and the ability to switch it is needed. And if the need is there, then the requirement will be there and Visa will switch for you.
And MasterCard too, because there's other wallets that you can have a MasterCard and Visa and MasterCard, both on them. And let me just say this, that this is anonymous. I pay no bank charges at all. Only if I draw money at the ATM will I pay charges on that, because Visa has got to settle the bank whose ATM I'm using. So there's now already a Bitcoin ATM in Kailami.
So just on that point, though, Dion, what someone listening to this conversation in Pretoria or Durban or whatever, what do they do? Do they take the money that's under their mattress and sit on it?
No. I can show
get rid of it.
I can show you how you can earn Bitcoins or we call Satoshis, because Nakayama Satoshi was the guy who developed this open source blockchain technology. And if you go onto a computer now at Blockchain Info, it's an open source ledger. You can see every transaction. You'll see it scrolling there, happening now in the world. Do you think the banks will ever open their ledgers to us?
No.
To see where my money is, the eight days that it take it from here to get it to my daughter in New Zealand, I send her money, this money, and 30 seconds after I've pressed the button on my computer, I get an SMS to say, "Thank you, Daddy, I've got my money." But 30 seconds, not a single cent.
So we can talk a lot about, I know you have strong views around banking and many others. Just tell me very quickly, Bitcoin.
Yeah.
What is that going to mean to banks?
What's it going to mean to banks?
What's the result? What's the implications for banks?
I don't know, but banks is not going to be very much longer with us.
Mm-hmm.
Because if that superstorm hits us, which is going to happen within the next 18 months, I have no doubt about that.
Where does it start?
You see, the only thing that the Federal Reserve ever did right was to allow Lehman Brothers in 2008 to collapse. Everything else they did was wrong to save the banks.
Bailing out AIG and Citigroup and all those things.
If we had taken the medicine and allowed Goldman Sachs and Citibank to collapse, it would have been terrible.
Northern Rock in
but
the
we
UK.
Would have now been coming out of that, and we would begin to recover with an economy that was sound and was again based on. You see, capitalism got terminally ill in the First World War and eventually died in the Second World War. Mm. And since then, we had creditism. Nobody used that word. We don't need more isms. We're not people to take responsibility for their own lives. So you ask me where you get Bitcoin. No, in the advertising business on the alternative economy, you get Bitcoin for nothing.
Mm.
Okay.
They call it faucets. That's the advertising platform. I form a website, and there I'm going to get people to advertise on my website. They're going to pay me in Bitcoin.
Mm.
But they won't advertise unless I've got traffic to my website.
So what's on your website to draw the traffic?
I pay you Satoshis to come and visit my website. And the more people visiting my website, the more people I charge Bitcoins to pay for their advertising. So you just play that. You put, you get in a month about 150.
So put what, the videos and what?
Well, all sorts of there's sites which I can give you where you actually sit and you click and you watch an ad for 9 minutes and then you're getting paid 393 satoshis. Then you go on to the next ad and every day you can watch 40 ads.
Okay.
And then you take that 150 rand and you go and invest it in a cloud mining company and you begin to earn between 15 and 20% per month on your money. Because you see, that's how Bitcoin get into existence. You mine it. Mm. What do we mean by that?
Can I just ask you this, Dion, though? 2008 came, we saw the collapse, and then there was hope that we could rewrite the rules and, you know, reconfigure the system. Yet what we saw was kicking the can down the road.
What was that hope based that central banks have saved us? That was the hope.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So what is it that, you know, would change about this crisis that you see? Well, is this the final act?
Well, the first thing that we have to get rid of tomorrow, and I'm totally apolitical because politics can't help us. But the next time I vote is the political party that has at the top of the agenda the abolishment of the Reserve Bank.
And that's the EFF.
Well, let... No.
That's Kosatu.
They're crazy. They have to abolish it. Mm. But what we can do right now is to abolish the fractional reserve system, which allow banks to create 900 rand out of every 100 rand that's deposited with them out of thin air. And what it's worse, they create that 900 rand in the form of debt. The International Monetary Fund and the World Bank have a joint report filed at Davos with the World Economic Forum, which showed that South Africans were the biggest borrowers in 2015. 86% of all South Africans has borrowed money in 2015. Does that sound like an economy that is looking after its people?
Well,
we are all shackled up. I ask people, and sorry for just carrying on. I ask people at my seminars, you know, you became politically free in 1994. So what did that mean to you? You can now vote. You can now come and live in my suburb. You can send your children to my schools. So it's wonderful. But you've moved out of a prison of apartheid straight into a prison of debt. And it's to many of them worse than what the prison of apartheid was.
They've joined you in the prison of debt.
Pardon?
They've joined you in the prison of debt.
You studied it. You studied it.
Well, you know what? If people come to me and I've got people stepping over my doorstep in droves and say, Dion, and this is not from the townships. This is people that have recently high up jobs.
Okay, so this is the elite. Yeah. Or middle class.
Well, not the elite. The elites are the bankers.
They won't listen to you.
The Oxfam, if you've heard from them, filed a report at the World Economic Forum called...
And everyone was shocked. 1%.
Says that 1% has grown their wealth by $1.5 trillion, whereas the bottom half of the world population grew poorer by $4 trillion. Mm. That's what we... So I'm saying to you, get out of it. And our people are in droves leaving the formal economy, coming into the informal economy. But that informal economy, we have to understand, is unregulated. And that's the way we want it. Because regulation is allowing other people to take control over your life. Mm. You see, the NCC has never had a mandate to protect me against my own stupidity, has it?
Mm.
So what do they do? You see, I'm the guy. You all are aware of MMM.
We were going to ask you about that because there's a lot of Bitcoin parallels with MMM.
Let's contextualize this very quickly.
And Mr. Mavodi.
So Dion, you've taken the MMM thing to courts.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not a leader of MMM.
No, you're not.
I'm not a guider. I don't advocate MMM.
Yeah, but millions of people, even in South Africa,
there's a million people.
And that you see as part of the informal economy.
It is, yeah. It's a source of the informal economy.
Okay, very quickly tell us about that and how that plays in this whole thing, and then we need to start wrapping up.
Well, you see, the way MMM is used is wrong because people think that's a get-rich-quick scheme.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't. It's part of the social economy of the informal economy. That's where I'm going to get help to get me into a position where I can begin these investments so that I can become financially independent.
It's not a Ponzi scheme according to your appeal to the court. You want court to declare that it's not a Ponzi scheme.
Absolutely, because there's no interest, there's no investment. So you make a donation. I'm donating to you money to help you. It's a form of crowdfunding. And crowdfunding in the U.S. has already been accepted, except that the Securities Exchange Commission has regulated a part of crowdfunding to say that if you have a business and you're going to look for your venture capital in crowdfunding, you have to have at least 1 year's financial statements before you can issue a crowdfunding project.
Okay.
So, all right. You know, that matter is sub judice, but let me just say this, that, you know, by its actions, the National Consumer Council has actually put 1 million people's futures at risk. And
What did they do in essence? Did they freeze people's accounts, bank accounts? What happened?
You see, let me say this. They declared MMM. They said in September last year that they're going to investigate this number of Ponzi schemes.
Uh-huh.
And then in January, their spokesperson came out and he said that they've found that MMM is a Ponzi scheme and they have filed a report with the Hawks.
Okay. So to scare people, right?
Now, let me just say that. Now, after the court case has come out, the first thing is they said they've reported it to the Hawks because they haven't got the infrastructure to investigate it. So the first thing that raised my mind is, how do you declare something to be a Ponzi scheme if you admit, on the other hand, you can't investigate it?
Yeah.
So they've given it to the Hawks. Now, the police, up till today, has not responded to our application because the Commissioner of Police is our second respondent. And we had a phone call, our lawyers had a phone call from a colonel in their legal department to say they don't want to do it. And we said, well, all we want is the documents that the NCC has filed with you. He says, we've got no documents. They've not given us anything. Mm-hmm. So who's lying to whom? The National Prosecuting Authority has filed a notice to abide. So they're not going to oppose it. They're just going to abide by whatever the court rules.
So who's behind trying to destroy Triple M then? The
absolutely,
banks?
Absolutely. And they use the media because the media is controlled by the elite. It serves their purposes.
The banks.
To destroy it. Well, you know, I'm not saying that, but yeah. I'm telling you today that the most dangerous place to keep your money is in a bank. And the most dangerous place to put your pension is in a retirement annuity. Because what underlies that? You see, when the meltdown came and it was this that caused the collapse of Lehman Brothers, it was derivatives. What is there? Whoever approved these financial instruments?
But what happened, Dion? We had African Bank also go under here, right?
Well,
And the Reserve Bank came in. And
I don't want to get involved in that, but so, there was no media hype about it. You read about it for 2 days, and suddenly African Bank is back in business. You see, but there's
How can that be?
Ask the regulators. You know, that person, that actuary from the Actuaries Society of South Africa, which says he can't comment on MMM because his only problem with MMM is that's not regulated.
Yeah. And there's no building where you can go and march and say, stop, what are you doing?
Yeah. All right, so let's wrap this up. Richard, some comments here. You've been fairly quiet today.
I'm listening.
That's dangerous when Richard is quiet.
Yeah, Richard's quiet. So interestingly, so you say don't put your money in a bank, don't put money into retirement annuities. I mean, if you think of where the U.S. is and debt levels, etc., I mean, all of those fundamentals point to one thing and one simple thing, that any monetary system is under serious threat once if the global wheels start coming off. Where is the safe haven? What is the safe space? There's a few, but let's get to the point of, you know, small businesses and entrepreneurs and the likes. Yeah. The reality is that if you've got the opportunity to run a small business in any country in the world, it doesn't matter where you are, and you're actually able to produce tangible products that there's an active market and an active need for, the reality is that's probably your safest bet, because the reality is people are, well, whether they can pay you in some fiat currency, or they end up paying you in Bitcoin, or they end up trading and bartering like we used to do when the Volkswagen was around. The reality is, as long as the products are viable and needed, you will always have, let's call it, that safe haven space. the services industry, you know, as long as it's a service that every, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I always used to joke and say, you know, the reality is you're always going to need somebody to make the coffins and bury the dead. Mm. The reality is if you're in the services industry and you're in a required service space, you're also probably relatively safe. But if you're in the world of creating derivative products and selling insurance and
shifting money around,
or creating debt or servicing debt, I'm not so sure you're in a good space, to be honest.
You see,
okay, Dion, you've got to give us final comment,
yeah.
just a final warning or tip to people.
I'm going to answer on that.
My advice
to those people will also be this. Look at the alternative economy, how you can market and sell your products there. Because that is the growing economy. More and more people are looking at the alternative economy to buy things. I can go and buy my Lamborghini at the Lamborghini factory paying in Bitcoin today for it. I can buy a house in central Brooklyn in the US paying Bitcoin for it.
Okay. Now, part one. This is part
that's one.
One.
Let me just say the second thing, the other warning that I want to say is you can bet your bottom dollar that the central banks is going to do exactly the same mistake. They're not going to allow the banks to fail when the superstorm hit. They're going to start printing money to save the banks. And that will eventually lead to the collapse of the dollar.
Yeah.
And then we're in trouble because if South Africa keeps 40% of its reserves in dollars, we're going to be tomorrow morning when we wake up 40% poorer.
Yeah, we don't need a finance minister change to make that
okay.
happen.
I want just one more comment.
Okay,
I want a politician to ask our finance minister, what is South Africa's unfunded liabilities? So let's get a true picture of what our debt really is.
Good question, Dion.
Well, we have a verbal from the finance minister to come onto the show. We must just make it happen.
Can I be here to ask him the question?
No, you'll phone in.
All right, folks, thank you so much. Dion Janssen van Rensburg. I don't know if you call yourself a futurist or whatever.
He's Dr. Doom.
Dr. Doom.
I'm just a student of the economy.
Okay. Well, that was part one. We'll have a part two. We now have to say goodbye. We'll have you back, hopefully.
Thank you.
Alice Mnyandu, Richard Angus.
Thank you so much
for staying here. Louis Groenewald, listening, the old man. Maybe he needs to give us some wisdom. Next up, our leadership and education. We have a great principal from Soweto in the studio. And in the end, amidst all this doom and gloom and the challenges that lie ahead, guess what? We have to still educate our kids to understand the future. Stay with us.
This is CliffCentral.com.